Welcome to the NDE 4.0 podcast, where we ask five questions for a NDE or NDT expert. This is the show for NDE professionals where we dig into the big questions about NDE inspections and digital transformation. Every episode, we ask a NDT expert five questions that can help you do your job better. We have Dr. Rippy Singh with us today. Welcome, Rippy.
Thank you.
Rippy is an innovation and productivity coach with over 30 years of learning and experience. Rippy, could you provide our audience with a little more background about your experience, please?
Sure, Bruce. My first career, you know, some people jokingly call me Rippy 1.0, was in academic. So I spent about 10 years in various universities teaching. And Rippy 2.0 was in the corporate America, that I worked for United Technologies and later on also started the renewable energy business for Alstom Power, which was then later acquired by GE. Now, and Rippy 3.0 was the small business that I first started, and now here I am, Rippy 4.0, so to say, in my fourth stage of life, trying to adopt and bring Industry 4.0 into various domains.
I love the 1 to 4.0. We'll feed off of that in our conversation today, no doubt. So again, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Well, we have five questions for you today, as we do all of our NDE experts. You ready to get started?
Absolutely.
Okay. So question number one is, let's start with the big picture. What's the purpose in your mind of NDE 4.0, and or why should industry leaders pay attention to it?
Well, Bruce, that's a very good starting question here. You know, Simon Sinek says start with the why, and I follow that. You know, start with the why. So why NDE 4.0? Well, let's first look at what is NDE 4.0. NDE 4.0 is trying to take the traditional inspection technologies and bring in the Industry 4.0, the digital world together. It's a confluence of digital and physical technologies in some sense, right? Now, we know that the whole purpose of NDE is to assure safety of critical infrastructure, whether it's airplanes or it's gas plants or pipelines or bridges or railroad or whatever, right? So NDE 4.0 essentially still has the same purpose. We want to assure safety of the infrastructure, safety of the operators using that infrastructure, whether you are a passenger in an airline or you are a traveler in a train, and also the safety of the inspectors, because they're also humans working in adverse conditions to do the inspection, right?
Sure.
But then why NDE 4? Is it really have a different purpose than traditional NDE? Slightly, yes. You know, what happens is in NDE 4.0, we are bringing in a concept of a digital twin, which means I have a cyber replica of reality. And I can now use the cyber algorithms to predict the reality, which means I can actually, in the digital twin, I can foresee the physical world. And I can take proactive actions to prevent from bad events occurring. So the purpose, safety, is still being the same, but you are now equipped with a lot more prognostics ability, with a lot more data that can actually enhance your ability to enhance safety. And on top of it, you can do it cost effectively. So the whole purpose, you know, just like Industry 4.0, the purpose is the betterment of humanity, the betterment of society.
Right.
The purpose of NDE 4.0 is really, I call it safety 5.0, which is essentially, I want to get safety, but I also want to get safety at an affordable cost, right? We all look for things like, hey, everything I want, it's safer, cheaper, better, right?
Right.
Faster, cheaper, better. What do we call it?
Yes.
Faster, cheaper,
that's
better.
That's it? Yeah.
Yeah, and better in the NDE's world is safer. So I want it safer, and I want it faster, and I want it cheaper. Now, in any traditional innovation, you know, you can only choose two. You end up having to live with the third one. I want it safer and faster. I can get it cheaper. I want it cheaper and faster. I can't get it safer. But when you actually take the opportunity of bringing cyber and physical world together, or once you are in a position where you can accomplish all three of them together for a while until the entire NDE 4.0 matures. So that's the purpose behind pursuing this confluence of cyber physical world. You know, safety, fast, and also affordability, all three together.
Do you, along that line, do you see industry leaders grabbing hold of that? I mean, what's the level of traction of that concept? I mean, I haven't heard the term confluence, talking about the cyber in the physical sense. And I think that's a wonderful point. Do you see industry leaders grabbing hold of that and moving with it?
So within the industry 4.0 world, Germans are talking about that. Japanese have taken it beyond cyber physical. They talk about cyber physical and human confluence because they say, you know, it's all in the end for the benefit of humanity. So, you know, again, human mentality, if you look at Robert's curve, it'll tell you that about 16% are early adopters. And 34% are early majority. You know, so early adopters have caught on to this concept. And now we are at that chasm where I have to go beyond 16-20% and get to the early majority and then the late majority. So we are at that point where, you know, 8-10% of the industry leaders have caught on and they are figuring out what business opportunities does this provide to them? What purpose does it serve for them? But at large, no, we have not received a mass traction on this topic yet.
I was just going to ask you about the timing, and I think you kind of touched on it with we're mostly in the early adopter stage, if I understood you right.
Yeah, and again, it's a, you know, when we talk about confluence of cyber physical technologies here, there are so many industry 4.0 technologies that are actually coming together, right? If you think of it, yes, there is industrial Internet of Things, then there's artificial intelligence, augmented reality, 3D printing, blockchain, 5G as an infrastructure. And these technologies, I mean, there's so many of them, right? Eventually, every business will adopt all of them. But for different businesses, the timing to adopt them is different. You know, if you're in the radiography business, you want to go towards the digital image processing and artificial intelligence for image processing before you think of using 3D printing in your system. But on the other side, if you're in an ultrasonics business and you're looking at doing providing capability on a submarine where, hey, I may have to suddenly inspect some location that I've never inspected before and I don't have a sensor that can take me there, can I modify the sensor using a 3D printer out there in the field and use it? You know, so for different applications within the inspection world, all of these different digital technologies should come in at a different timing. So you may be early for one and you may be late for something else. The point is each business leader has to look at it from the perspective of what will add value to me now. What will add value to me 3 years from now or 5 years from now, or it has not yet matured, or maybe I never need it?
Rippy, I'm thinking perhaps a direction provided to our audience today would be to establish a roadmap, perhaps, relative to their business and the technologies that they want to plan when and why.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I think each of the companies that I work with, we look at it, you know, in the next 5 years to 10 years, let's have a digitalization or whatever you want to call it, digital transformation roadmap, and then say, you know what, out of these 9 technologies, I don't have to worry about these 3 today, but the other 5 or 6, I need to adopt in the next 5 years, but let me go after augmented reality now, because that's a value creation. I can immediately see it, and something else later, and something else later. Plus, one also has to realize that, you know, certain technologies like artificial intelligence, which are based on the data you gather. So every company that I talk to, I advise them that please frame your problem now, please establish the context now, and start gathering the data now, even if you don't know how to use it, even if you don't have the machine learning algorithms, but let's figure out let's figure out a way to capture all the data so that when we learn how to use AI, we'll actually have something to work off of.
In that conversation, are you exploring different ways to capture that data?
Yes, we do.
I just think about the enormous challenge of that with perhaps a lack of technology or lack of process to do that efficiently. Yeah.
Yeah. You will be surprised that how many people are actually just not doing anything about the data because they don't know what they're going to do with it. So why worry about it? Why save it? I mean, machines are capturing it, but you just don't store it. Or you store it and you say, hey, keep it for 30 days and keep overwriting it after 30 days, right? It's there. A lot of times it is there, but we just don't consciously make an effort to keep it in a structured manner. See, structuring it is also very important. I can't just have a bunch of data thrown in different files because 2 years from now, I will not be able to search it and sort it. So I got to kind of at least create a structure so that I can store it properly, right?
It seems as you have a view to my laptop computer in my library of files. I can never find anything based on my lack of structure. You're helping me make a connection between the data structure and the gathering back to your opening point about the cyber and the physical confluence. That seems like a really realistic and relatable concept to take advantage of NDE 4.0, that is to bring forth the faster, better, cheaper example that you used by looking at data as a cyber technique and digitalization as a set of technologies and processes. Does that seem like I'm on the right track in understanding your points here?
Yes, I would say yes.
Okay, good. How about, you know, I know you have a lot of experience. I'm not sure if it's in the 2.0 or the 3.0 RIPI version that you explained earlier, but you have a lot of other industry experience. Are you seeing other industries leading the way that we can model or that we should, replicate or at least follow?
Should we follow another industry? That's a good question. I would say, the underlying technologies are pretty much the same, right? It's everybody is applying those technologies. We can learn the lessons from how they use, right? Last year I was in China and I was quite impressed by, at the same place, there was a conference going on around digital construction and how this whole IoT-based and how an AI-based activity that is going on in the construction industry. I was quite surprised. And not, I'm not surprised that in Wuhan they could build the hospital in 10 days.
Yeah. Right? A lot to talk about there, yeah.
Right. I mean, at the back of my mind, I'm thinking the amount of coordination that is required to pull off a project like that is so immense that it must be running on something which is not human.
I would agree. It was a large facility as I saw it as well. I forgot the patient.
Right?
But it's not a small building.
Right. So when you think about faster, cheaper, better, is there a lesson there from the digital world in the construction industry? Absolutely. I have a client in the construction sector over here, and we talk about how we will take their BIM modeling, which is the building information modeling, from that point to actually having a augmented reality based visualization for the architect so they can think of what the building would look like, translated on to using an automated system to generate what they call as, POs for the suppliers so that I can get my doors and windows shipped automatically for this building, right? Because it's coming off from the same model. So the same model, once you're in the room and you say, I like this room, click, right? And the system starts issuing POs for the doors and the windows and whatever has to be 3D printed, starts coming in together. And then even afterwards, what I noticed over there is the same guys, the inspectors are actually planning that I will go into the construction site with my augmented reality goggles and I can overlay the actual construction with the digital visual and I can immediately see whether the door is placed correctly or was it off by 6 inches.
That's fascinating.
You know, so the same things can happen. I mean, in the inspection world, we can adopt it. The same thing in the medical world, we can adopt it. I do have startup clients in the medical devices, and we see similar stuff over there too.
Thank you. Those are great examples. So I'm led to think now about standardization. Are there any standards that the organization can adopt that perhaps would follow another industry or simply for the inspection industry?
So here is what happens just think about it. When you talk about memory cards, right? You remember how we had this SD card and a different flash drive and your laptop has got six different ports. Why does that happen? Right? There are people who want to be ahead of the technology and they want to create a monopoly and they create their own little design and they want to monopolize that, right? And somebody else comes up with a different design, and somebody else comes up with a different design. And at one point, the industry gets frustrated and says, guys, this is not working out. Let's get together. And let's accept, okay, we will have USB 2 and a USB 3, right? And HDMI, and everything else should fall apart, right? So we are at the same stage with Industry 4.0 in terms of, you know, bringing technologies together. When I'm trying to put cyber physical systems together, and they have to both connect at the hardware level and at the software level, right? And there are multiple options out there, okay? And industry struggles with it. So Johannes Vrana, whom you'll probably talk in another podcast, will touch upon those technology standards that are happening in Germany. And within ASNT, we formed a team which is going to look at a whole bunch of those and then make recommendations for ASNT, saying, you know what? For the entity world, it's best for us to follow, whether it's DICON D or, I don't know, UL7 or something, or, you know, here are nine options, but these two are best. Let's gravitate in that direction. So we are at that stage where, in the technology world, we are saying, let's adopt something, let's accept something. And I'm not sure that, again, any standard that we adopt will last more than 4 or 5 years because technology will change and somebody will come up with a new one.
Sure.
My TV has a new port every 3 years when I buy a new TV. And then you come up with adopters, right? So we'll end up with a situation, well, this OEM is following that standard and this service company is following that standard. And Ricky Singh says, oh, there's money to be made by creating an adopter. So then we'll have all those adopters in between. That's where we are in the technology side. You know, essentially what I'm saying is that this thing is moving so fast. Okay. And it's driven by business objectives that it is hard to hold on to a standard. Okay. But it's still not Wild West. We still have a few things and it's falling in place slowly. I would expect in about 2 years' time, we will stabilize as to where we are gravitating towards on the technology side.
Well, that's not a long time, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
in terms of processes, right? So technology is one piece. In terms of processes, we developed a process to manage innovation about 4 or 5 years ago, which now some pieces of it have become an ISO standard on innovation management. So ISO 56000, which was released, you know, three bits of that have been released in the last 1 year. Three more will come out in the next 2 years. And it's on innovation management guidance. It actually provides you how you generate ideas, how you manage the intellectual property, how you have partnerships on innovation. So from process perspective, there is an ISO standard which is coming out.
Well, that's got to guide us well.
Yeah.
I love the... I'm sorry, go ahead, Rippy.
And then, you know, in terms of education, we have the certification thing, and we debate about, you know, what's the role of NDE4 with certification? Does it require a third certification? I'm not in favor of that. I would rather say, ASNT level 3s should have enough proficiency to be able to handle digital piece of the technology. And ASNT level 1, I'm okay if they don't know what is NDE 4.0 for the next 3 years. So we need to develop those requirements for the skill piece so that, again, when you say I'm an ASNT level 3, I know what to expect from you in terms of NDE 4.0. And there's a subcommittee which is looking at that. Could take another year or two to develop those. We're getting there.
Yeah, well, that's encouraging. And in my world, I would say people, process, and technology. You touched on all of that in the examples of standards.
Yeah.
You know, from an innovation process to education and certification of people doing the inspections and such. I think that's always a balancing direction to, you know, to particularly with digital transformation.
Yeah.
How about, speaking of people, as we were just touching on, how about culture? You know, a confluence of cyber and physical, and now we're talking about people, process, and technology. How do you think all of this will fit our current culture? And do you expect any major cultural changes in the future?
Yeah. So, Bruce, that's a very interesting question. I can share with you some firsthand experiences of the computers coming in, okay? I'm not that old, but I grew up in India. And when I started my engineering school, I was still using log tables and slide rule.
Sure.
I was a sophomore when I was allowed to use a calculator. It was a very fascinating machine for me. And fortunately, by the time I became a senior in my undergrad, the very first computer in the town that came, I had a chance to go actually see what it means, okay? So I saw that computer, we had to go into the building, we had to take an air shower to get rid of any dust, and we were on special gear, you know, completely as if you're in you're in a virus zone.
Sure.
It's pretty much like the Wuhan hospital to go into the computer room. And that was the first computer. I'm standing in front of it just like this and looking at it. Wow.
That would be
about it. Yeah. And, you know, 6 months later, there were major social strikes all over the city and the country. And people said, we should not let computers come in, because they'll take away jobs, they will do this, they will completely kill the society. There was so much resistance, there was so much friction, so much inertia, right? That, I mean, there was bloodbath around some of those episodes, you know? It was really, really horrible. I was all excited about it because I'm on the 3% innovator side of it. But I'll tell you, I mean, culturally, yes, this change is hard for any company, because it is so radical and it is so scary and it is threatening people for their jobs, right? Whenever I talk about automation with one of my clients, you know, two people get excited, but other eight will find some reason to say why this will not fit in their company, why this is a wrong thing. In the back of their mind is their jobs will be gone. What people miss out is that it's not really a jobs question. It's a skills question. Jobs will be there. In fact, the number of jobs will be even more, but they would require different skill set. So the question is, if people are resisting, what they are telling you is that I'm not ready to learn anything more. I've given up on learning. Okay, I learned enough. Now it's my job to encash on what I learned. And we are telling them, no, you need to go learn something new. Right? If you notice, I actually resist using the word that I have 30 years of experience. I tend to say that I have 30 years of learning and 2 years of experience, because really everything before that was kind of now obsolete in this era. This is a skills question. We should not resist developing new skills. Now, compare that time when I first saw the computer in late 80s in India, when everybody resisted computers from coming in, to today, 2020, which is 30 years later. Computers is the number one economy for India, right? Everybody in the world has outsourced software development to India, right?
Absolutely.
The whole economy boomed because of that. So somebody at that time was visionary enough to say, you know what? I'm not gonna let these naysayers and people who are resisting actually shut me down. I'm gonna put these computers, because this is the right thing to do. We are in the same stage today. Adopting this is the right thing to do. Okay, we are at a point where, hey, Bruce, I always tell people, every industrial revolution has reduced the number of days we go to work. We used to work 7 days a week before the industrial revolution.
Absolutely.
Then it came to six, then it came to 5.5, then it came to five. If I can put robotics and automation in the system and maintain the same level of productivity, I should be able to take home the same salary working 4 days a week rather than 5 days a week.
Work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. Let the machine do the job for you. Somebody asked me, he said, Rippy, does it mean eventually it'll be 3 days a week, 2 days a week? I said, yeah, absolutely.
Why not?
Why not?
Maybe in somebody else's lifetime, but why not?
Yeah, it is. That's okay. You know, Bruce, it's a scenario. I'll throw it out there and you can probably choose to keep it or edit it. But I envision one day there'll be machines doing everything, including generating energy for themselves, including maintaining themselves, including producing new machines, and humanity will have to find a different purpose for what they do with their life.
That sounds like another discussion. You know, I love your spirit behind the skills and a commitment to lifelong learning. You've demonstrated that. And, you know, there's a lot of press today even about jobs being replaced, and yet our worldwide economy is doing great and people have adopted those skills. So two thoughts come to my mind. One is it's leadership also, as we started talking about what should our industry leaders be doing about NDE 4.0. You know, people want to be led and they need to hear that message and what's in it for me and be encouraged and supported in their learning to obtain skills. And the other part is with robotics, as we talk about today, it is eliminating a lot of repetitive tasks, no doubt. But on the same token, the human capacity and the analytical abilities of humans are more valuable than ever, even from all the way down to the interaction skills we have human to human. So there's so much to talk about in that topic. But relative to our topic today, it just seems like a huge part of leadership for NDE 4.0 in our industry.
I agree with you. I think there are three or four articles that have come out on called Leadership 4.0.
Okay.
It's a term, it's about how do you lead an organization through the digital transformation and how do you lead a digital organization, right? There are topics we talk about called robotic supervision, okay? Because eventually robots, I mean, they might become your supervisor, right? On the shop floor, you may have to take an instruction from the robot. It's quite possible. Hey, I'm able to do it from the computer, right? It's just, you need to work with robots side by side. And last week I was having a conversation with somebody around, intelligence management. We have heard data management. We've heard about knowledge management. When you start talking about bringing artificial intelligence into your system, whether it's NDE 4.0 or general industry 4.0, right? I mean, if just like you're thinking of robot on the shop floor, you could be thinking of, you're in a conference room with two leaders, two scientists, and one artificial intelligence computer sitting out there giving you opinions about based on the data and behavior you had in the past. And you're going to have to now manage that, right? And within a company, do you manage an artificial intelligence as if it's a physical asset like a machine, or do you treat it like an intellectual asset like a human being, where I must actually assign a mentor to an artificial intelligence so that we train that AI system properly, right? So as a leader, one has to think about, hey, on one side, I'm getting these automated machines to work with the machines. I'm also getting intelligence augmentation to work with my intelligent people. And now I have to deal with all of them together. And just like, you know, within an organization, you know, sometimes there are some people who are very smart. They think very fast, they act very fast, and we call them, you know, they are a misfit.
We do.
Right?
Yes.
The same thing can happen now with artificial intelligence in the room. And this thing is so fast that there are people who are going to get up and turn the knob off. Hey, shut up. I don't need you today. Pop me on your head.
Well, at least we know our future is going to be very fun. Well, Rippy, we've covered a lot of information. Your insights have been wonderful. My thoughts leaving here, as we started with a confluence of cyber and physical, to really doing things faster, better, and cheaper. That is the business objectives of behind digital transformation, having that digital transformation roadmap that you talked about, and all of the different technologies relative to the business objectives of that particular organization, to a absolutely brilliant discussion on the people impact and culture and skills and continuously learning, and perhaps a taste of what our future will be like. Seems to be that the world's an exciting place, and with NDE 4.0, there's nothing but opportunity for us to define for the future business and generations.
Absolutely. You summed it very, very well, Bruce. Yeah, I think you had some real good questions, and this was a wonderful conversation. Thank you for your time and patience. And yes, it is going to be fun. This is the most exciting period in the history of humanity. I tell you, 200,000 years, these 50 years are the best.
I love it. I love your positiveness. How can our audience contact you in the future for any other information?
So the best way actually to reach me and to find out what I'm doing is through LinkedIn. Okay. If you just put my name, RITISINGH in LinkedIn, I think there's only one so far, so you will reach me. That's the best way to connect with me. Then we have a communication channel. You can send me an email through that. It's also connected to my website. You know, fortunately, this name is not very common. So even if you throw Ripi Singh into Google, it'll probably take you to the same LinkedIn page where you'll find me.
Well, I can validate the LinkedIn and Ripi. There's one and only, and we have Ripi today. So thank you. You can learn more about Ripi and NDE 4.0 at floodlightsoft.com. Thank you, Ripi. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
For more expert views on NDT, subscribe to the Floodlight Software blog at floodlightsoft.com.